Welcome to the Rand CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
What's up, everyone? This is Dylan Marma bringing to you the Rand CRE Show. Today, we're going to be discussing two things. Number one, we're going to be introducing one of our newest team members, the newest team member to the Rand Commercial Real Estate family of companies. So we're very excited about this. And number two, we're going to be discussing a year-end review from the financing world. For all of our active investors that are listening and plugging into the show, you're well aware that there was a lot of twists and turns and ups and downs when it came to the lending world. We saw some big surprises throughout the year. And today we want to go over a recap of 2019, as well as what investors can do to be best prepared to set themselves up for success moving into 2020. So first off, introducing our newest team member. His name is Mitch Stogner. Now, Mitch has worked with a diverse group of real estate investors and developers all throughout the Southeast. Before he joined Rand Capital, Mitch was with Sweetwater Capital, Capstone, and Franklin American Mortgage Company, working directly with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, and all the other lending agencies to basically provide investors with the most quality sources of financing throughout wholesale and correspondent channels. He's worked on over 250 million in transactions, everything from acquisitions, refinances, retail, hotel, apartments, and most importantly, chicken farms. So he's got quite the story, quite the background in the finance world. So let's give a big welcome to Mitch. How are you doing today?
Good, Dylan. I appreciate you having me on. I'm excited to be part of the Rand fam and get things going here. 2019 was a great year, so excited to discuss it with you.
We're excited to have you here. And I know for many folks listening to the podcast, we were just doing an event last week, Mitch's first official week with the team. We flew out to Orlando, spoke at the MREX event, and we're sharing a little bit on what we're going to touch on today. So getting straight to work. We're not wasting any time.
Absolutely, man. I get it. And it's good to be a part of a team that gets that. So, you know, get right into it. And we appreciate Nikolai at the MREX event. That was a good panel. So, looking forward to it.
Love it. So let's start off before we get into 2019. Let's just hear a little bit on your story. How did you get into the financing world? You have a very interesting story. You've been in the space in all different avenues for quite some time now. So we'd love to hear about how it all started.
Yeah. So for me, right out of college, went to work in farm credit, where the chicken farms come into play. I was focused on financing land, timber, and chicken farms. Chicken farms were a very big commodity down here in South Mississippi where I was located. But that being said, you know, I worked with a lot of great people during that time. I always wanted to chase more of a, you know, competitive, stronger asset type. You know, there's not a lot of chicken farms and timber to get you excited about, you know, where you're going with your job in terms of financing, because you're limited. However, worked with great people, enjoyed the mess out of it starting out in my financing career. Wife was from Nashville, went up to Nashville with her to meet with, you know, her family occasionally. And I fell in love with the market, the place. It was just, it was good people. There were good job opportunities up there and I pursued it. So, went up to Nashville actually jobless, but knew there was, you know, plenty of opportunities in the market, and, tried to sell property for a little while starting out. So I got away from what I knew, but jumped right back into what made sense. Whenever my wife got pregnant, my 2-year plan quickly jumped, to a 9-month plan. And I realized that it was good. It was time, you know, rather than it just being, okay, I need to change, I need to figure out something that I'm better at, and that's financing. You know, financing was what I understood. It was what I knew. And, you know, investment sales, brokerage, those guys are great at what they do, and I'm not one of them. So I realized it was time for me to transition back into what I knew, and that was financing. So I went to work with Franklin American Mortgage Company in their loss mitigation repurchase department, where I was studying the loans through the sold through the wholesale and correspondent channels. It was very, very good experience for me because it allowed me to really dive into the loan details of, you know, where the parameters are on what is and is not allowed by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, VA, HUD, the whole nine yards. But then again, it was on the operational side. And I always was looking forward to the day to where I could get back to production. And the opportunity came about at Capstone Capital. And jumped on board with those guys. Had a great, you know, year kicking off on 2018. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, different, I should say a variety of deal structures out there. But my primary focus was on multifamily and permanent loan financing. So 2019, I really got my groove and was able to help a lot of good investors that year. And here I am today joining the RAND fam. So.
Love it. So you talked about your experience going from the finance world, moving up to Nashville. Nashville is the hub of real estate in the Southeast for many, right? So you knew there was going to be opportunity. You felt confident in that. You got into sales brokering. And this, I found this interesting because you and I have spoke about this before. You just found it was not for you. It actually wasn't something that really excited you as you ventured into the sales brokerage world, which is interesting because there's different types of people. Some people would find finance to be the most boring thing on earth with just the numbers and the changes and paying attention to the treasuries and so on. And then some people love the physical components and attributes of real estate investing and what it does for people in that sense. Whereas others are the opposite, right? And you seem to get more energy off the finance side. So what is it that gives you the juice when it comes to the finance aspects of real estate?
Right. Well, I mean, the whole deal itself, everybody's kind of focused on what? Getting it closed, right? For me, I would find myself in these conversations with owners and investors really talking like I was still a loan officer or a broker. I just kept veering back into, you know, not when are you interested in selling or anything like that. And I was like, well, what are you doing with your property? You know, so, well, in that case, it kind of just, I would lay out there that I was more interested in helping the guy out with what kind of financing structures he had in place. And I had a terrible sales pitch, I guess, for investment sales brokerage. I was just so focused on, you know, where the deal was financing wise. And, you know, there's always that, you know, back to it, the portion of the deal where, hey, we're trying to get it closed. I find myself, you know, always more interested in, hey, where are we with the financing? You know, like, let's, do we have our engineering phase one? We have everything in line. Is things that typically your, you know, sales broker, there's different aspects that they would focus on. I came with, you know, more expertise and more interest in a completely different part of the transaction. And it just naturally, God willing, put me right back into it. So it was easy for me to just make the decision that, you know, I leave that for, you know, my partners and my relationships I have in the investment sales brokerage shop that do a great job. And they know that I'm going to be able to do my part in the financing side. So it's a good balance to have in the marketplace as well, having those guys with you. But I'm not one of them. I learned that. And I learned that my value and the way I add value is by focusing on the financing and dominating that versus the other side. So it's just, it's one of those things that, you know, you learn early on, and once you learn it, it helps to provide the niche for your career. So,
yeah, definitely believe in doubling down on your niche and your strengths. And I think that was definitely a wise move. And I think that's really what it comes down to for those listening is what is it that is getting you excited, right? Because for some may not even be a fit for investing, right? They may just not want to deal with the risk and having money floating out there and so on. And maybe more of a brokerage on the sales side or the finance side could be a better fit. For some that are listening that, you know, are looking at considering sales brokers or going to the sales broker world, I think a lot of people don't really think about the lending side at first, right? They think about being a broker and they think about selling properties, but there's such a large world of opportunity in the brokerage space. And I know for us, since we've began Rand Capital, it's opened up our eyes a tremendous amount. It's opened up a lot of doors. And we've realized that this is such a vast realm that you really need to stick to it and learn it to the best of your ability, because there's so many options out there. And it's a lot of times it gets perceived as maybe a commodity, but I'd say it's very far from that. I'd say that when you have an expert there, you're really able to craft a plan that is going to result in the deal being better risk-adjusted returns, better exit strategy, more flexibility, more optionality. So I know this is something that you put a lot of focus on, because right now we're 10 plus years into the market cycle right now. Everyone's waiting to know what's going to happen next. And we can't predict, but we can prepare. So Mitch, what would you say for you are some of the key aspects that you're looking at when you're working with an investor to make sure that they're prepared if they're taking on, whether it's agency debt or whether it's some kind of a bridge product?
Yeah. So, you mentioned bridge. There is a ton of that product floating in the market right now. And it does have its, appealing factors as a product. It's non-recourse. Your investors love that whenever you're looking at, having them not have to guarantee a deal. However, there's that product floating out there for a reason, right? Because there's such a high demand for it. And what I'm learning and what I'm seeing a lot of people focus in on is all the sweeteners that a bridge product will have. And they kind of just look at you surprised when you will, have you really looked at where your deal is going to exit? How are we going to exit this bridge loan? And that's one thing that, I think it surprises a lot of folks, because I don't just jump right in and say, yeah, I'll do your bridge loan. You know what I mean? I've got tons of relationships with bridge lenders. And the reason I have the relationships I do with those bridge lenders is because I know what they're there to do. And we know how to get the deal on the bridge loan and out of the bridge loan a lot better. That's the key for me. And that's one thing on the permanent side that a lot of guys tend to push on the back burner, I would say, to focus more on let's get this property acquired and let's get our CapEx dollar right, built in, et cetera, et cetera. And then where are we going to be in, 1, 2, 3 years? Mm-hmm. Do we really have a good idea where we're going to be on that? It's one of the things that I focus in on a lot earlier on than most guys doing these days. And once you put that emphasis on the bridge loan, it can tend to distract you from what the ultimate goal is, which is where we're going to be with the property, mm-hmm. 5, 10, 7 years. So,
yeah. Well, it's the same perspective from your shoes as the investor's shoes. Those that are taking on that product and are more prepared ahead of time are protecting their downside. A lot of people are thinking very short term right now and just thinking, how do we close the deal? If you're a broker, it's how do we get the commission? If you're an investor, it's how do we get the investors on board and get higher leverage and maybe put less capital out of pocket? But you have to be thinking about where it's going to land you in 3 years from now, 5 years from now. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's very short-sighted. So I think that's really
important.
And
that's one thing that I've learned, that I'm able to add a lot of value to my clients because of, you guys do tend to focus on the short term. You tend to focus on, hey, where are we here? This deal, cash flows, it, all the numbers are being mm-hmm. met. And I add a little bit different perspective to, I'm going to look at parts of the deal that, hey, well, we got to make sure we do this, 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 and this to make sure we're able to exit the loan. And, it's good to have someone on your team during this process whenever you are looking at it. Regardless, for me, I've always, I've been late to a deal and an acquisition. I've been, right there, perfect timing, and been able to get it smoothly flowing. But it's good to have my perspective in a sense that I know what to look for, and I know how to overcome a lot of these obstacles that people are hitting on the bridge loan process, or any community bank process as well. It's just one of those things. You're going to have obstacles. You're going to have thresholds to hit. It's good to have that someone in your team that expects the long term a little more than you when you're focused so short term.
That's right. And you're a long term guy. That's actually how we built our personal relationship right. as a group, right? I was getting, I'd get calls from Mitch all at all hours of the day. I've spoken to you at different times at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m., right? And given right. you calls late at night as well, too, with questions that we had in regards to our financing and just the value you've been able to add to us as a group, over the long haul. You know, I think at first, even before we were working together, you would just call and provide updates and market insights or be able to help us with, you know, current loans that we had in the works. And just that long-term mentality of realizing that it's all about relationships and sticking with and doing what's right. And mm-hmm. that will pay dividends. So I think that's something we can all learn from. And it's not always easy, right? I think we're programmed in today's society to be chasing instant gratification, but the delayed gratification is really where true lasting success is derived from. So on that note, I wanted to touch base and circle back to 2019 and do a bit of a year-end review on the financing side of things. Now, from my shoes, sitting in the investor seat, I remember underwriting deals at the end of 2018 saying we have to lock in the rate. We have to lock in the rate quickly because rates are going to spike. And we were all under the impression that we had the best rates ever at the end of 2018 and we had to take advantage of it. And lo and behold, we go to see interest rates getting cut twice throughout the year. So it was a huge surprise, at least to us it was, and I think to many. So that was pretty crazy. What did you see on your end as far as major surprises or what was the reaction to rates being cut?
I mean, for me, being in the financing industry as long as I have, I've kind of been obviously I have a little more experience than everyone else in the sense that I kind of grab the market at where it's at and I try to determine how I can take advantage of it, right? And take advantage of it for my clients. I want to be my client's champion in a sense that, you know, here we are today. Let's see what we can accomplish here. Of course, a lot of guys like to ride it out. That is a little more difficult for me to do because I don't know what to expect. We all don't know what to expect. But, you know, 2019 was a year that you saw a lot of, first of the year deals being pushed through that were 18 deals. That they ran mm-hmm. out of the funds essentially in October, November. And
that's right.
Rates were where they were for a reason. They had all that delayed business at the first of the year. Then you start seeing, the cut to rates occur closer to the summertime, and it was very, very promising. It's great to see that because you're working so hard to do so well for your clients on their deals that whenever you're given that gift, we were okay with it here. Let's just take a break look at each other and say, hey, what's our ultimate goal now? You know, like, let's take advantage of this thing and really put a good product on your property. I mean, it's time to do it. And that's one of the things that I learned a lot more about is how gambling, how the gambling mindset, it's big out there right now. I mean, there are a lot of people taking the gamble on a lot of things. That's fine. But it's also good to have the backup plan or the plan to just go ahead and take advantage of the lending market with where it's at.
Well, let's talk about what gambling is, right? I see it as there's really two gambling methods. There's number one, I have this floating rate right now. Maybe it's a bridge, right? And I'm pushing off refinance due to the fact that I'm hoping that I'm optimistic that rates may be better in the beginning of the new year, something to that effect. That's one form of gambling. And then the other form of gambling that I see is the rate lock, right? It's always that's more of the short-term gambling was maybe we can get an early rate lock and lock in 30 days ahead of time. We've had some phenomenal early rate locks, but there has been times where we've seen the rates kind of slowly going. So we've pushed it a few weeks and a lot of times we've been fortunate, but sometimes it goes up a bit and you right. really are gambling in those instances. So you never know what's going to happen. So,
and I'm all for it, go after it, but don't come back to whenever it does hit that point where the gamble, we hit sevens on the craps table.
Yeah.
You just, hey, we messed up, but let's hurry up. We still got a plan. Just all my goal is I'm okay with the gambling. However, look at the numbers, look at where we're shaking out, and don't focus too much on the short-term side of things. Whenever, again, I go back to, I'm a long-term guy, look at where Rays are, man. You can really put a sweet loan product on your property right now. You know, Fannie and Freddie are actively pursuing business. They're competing with each other. It's a good time to take advantage of the market. And that is exactly what I like to focus on. And hey, yeah, we can wait a little bit. You lose a few bips here and there, and that's, I'm all about it. I tend to focus on that for other pieces of a property that people don't really understand that may qualify for that in general. Mm-hmm. Affordability, green discount, et cetera. That was another factor that played a lot in 19. But going back to it, gambling is whenever you're looking at your numbers, where you are currently, how stingy do you want to be? Or let's keep the game plan going. Let's look at the long-term goal and move on from where we are with this property and get back to what we know how to do, and that's develop and grow, right? Or mm-hmm. buy and grow. It's that's my goal, is to accelerate the growth the best way and most efficient way possible. So
right. No, I love that. It's sticking with the big picture, and it's the same thing as if you're negotiating on a $10 million deal and there's a $25,000 issue going on, right? You can get caught up in that stuff, and sometimes sometimes deals blow up with little things, right? So you have to be able to be smart and stay focused on the big picture.
Exactly.
So what else did you see in 2019?
Yeah, so 2019 was, you know, a great year in terms of numbers for me. A lot of different variety of properties I worked on, but, you know, primarily multifamily. And one thing that really interests me and gave me a lot more confidence during those uncertain times was the private label product. That, you know, like 2018, we saw that push of business to 18. Well, I had a very, very, you know, concerning point there in June to August. You know, okay, we're pushing on where Fannie and Freddie are going to go. What are we going to do with these deals we have in the pipeline that are?
So let me just slow that down just for some of the listeners that aren't as in tune with that, right? With Fannie and Freddie, we're getting close to their lending limit, right? And that's what you're referring to, right? So they were approaching their lending limit, and there was uncertainty on the buy side if we were going to be able, and I'm sure the refinance as well, if we were going to be able to actually pull these deals through, right? So that's when the private labels came into effect. If you want to kind of break down what the private label is.
Right. So for me, it was obviously being able to have access to a lender's balance sheet is pretty incredible. And that was one thing that I was given there in July, and it allowed me to continue pursuing the deals for my clients the way I wanted to. Because I knew that if we weren't going to be able to do Fannie Freddie, that we were going to place these deals and these loans on these lenders' balance sheets and just carry them to 2019 or however long it would take to be able to fit these properties into it. It takes it out of the owner's hand and it puts it in mine and the lender's hand. We're going to work with, you know, remove the burden from the owner and pretty much take it in our hands. We got it. And it was a product that, for instance, Arbor, they are a very, very strong, you know, lender in the conventional and small balance space. I've had a great relationship with those guys for a while, and they opened the product up to me there in September. And whenever I was able to, you know, keep the rates and the terms exactly the same, sometimes even less, they were actually less in some cases for Fannie and Freddie, that made it a very appealing product and a very good thing to be able to offer to guys whenever you're looking to just get your property on a 10-year, 12-year basis. So
mm-hmm. So Fannie and Freddie, as you were approaching, you said maybe July up till September. So there was a lot of discussion about them approaching their lending limits and starting to tighten things up, and they were. And that's when you saw some of these the Dust lenders begin to take things on their own balance sheet in the short term, knowing that in January, Fannie and Freddie were going to have a new lending limit once again. And then we actually saw them raise their lending limit partway as we approached in the year. I forget the exact time period, but you know, then financing opened back up. So what was the reaction there?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, for me, it just kept the options open, right? So like I was able, with private labeling, I was able to have a plan B or, you know, another avenue to take my deals. And that was kind of limiting me with Fannie and Freddie. So whenever Fannie and Freddie opened up the doors again, we had essentially three more avenues to go, because private labeling took off. I think this is accurate, but I think Arbor did $100 million in private labeling in 1 month of September. So it was just, it made sense to, and I say that market focus for me. So that's probably a small number for some lenders, but it was big for me. And that took a lot of, you know, that uncertainty I talked about again, but it opened up the doors. And then when Fannie and Freddie opened back up their, you know, book of business for more deals, it's like you said, we continue to gamble, but we have resources with the private labeling or whatever. But Fannie and Freddie kept their doors open, and we just stuck to our essential standard plan that we typically tend to do as brokers. Mm-hmm. And it makes it easier when they battle back with us, you know, they don't shut the door. So,
yep.
There's a lot of heat in the market.
Love that. Now, when you look at the market, I think about halfway through the year, I'm sure it's been going on for the past few years, but definitely I'd say in the last 6 months, there's been more and more bridge lenders coming up left and right more than ever. And I think during the tightening up of Fannie and Freddie, that's when you started to see them reaching out a little bit more and just getting very, very active. And bridge lending is a double-edged sword for the investor using the debt, right? Because it can be amazing. It can be higher leverage. It can be more flexibility. It can be no prepayment penalty in many cases. It can be a great tool to really, really boost your returns. But it also, at the same time, entails more risk. And you don't see that until the deal goes bad, right? And a lot of times that's not always something that people are underwriting for, and it's important to stress test and you know watch out for the repercussions of the bridge lending, because in some cases, you know, these bridge lenders are underwriting to high interest rates. You have points, they can foreclose on the property in many cases. Some are recourse, some are non-recourse, right? So I think it's really, really understanding what the product is, and like you mentioned, what the exit strategy is as a whole. I think a lot of these groups are private too, and they're raising money from high net worth investors, because we're in such a low yield environment where everyone's chasing, you know, 3%, 4% returns on debt instruments. So when you see something that's able to, you know, present maybe a 10% return, maybe a little bit less, but you know, after you factor in points and the fact that some of these properties will be foreclosed, it gets up there. So it becomes attractive for, you know, investors to start funding these companies. So what should buyers be aware of when using bridge debt? What should they be thinking about? What questions should they be asking themselves?
Right. So it kind of goes back to what we discussed earlier, and that is the exit strategy. And having that, and you know, an exit strategy is not just, well, if things don't work out, I'll just sell it, right? That's not going to work. What you need to have in place is, what I try to go for first is, who is the bridge lender? You know, a bridge lender is very important, and there's a lot of that, you know, private raising of, you know, these companies that you name it. There's a lot of different bridge lenders out there, in my opinion. But when you have someone who, for instance, not quite ready for Freddie, or you have a Dust lender who is either providing the debt product themselves on the bridge side, or the relationship with the bridge lender that they are bringing in to the deal, that is a good scenario to be in, because the dust lender who you're already in contact with, all they're focused on is the permanent loan. You know, lenders make their money on servicing loans. So their focus is not necessarily on the bridge loan. It's going to be on exiting that deal to the permanent loan and, you know, engaging in a relationship with you that's going to last very long. So the bridge product is something that first and foremost, know the products and the lenders that are out there, and know your exit, know exactly what your exit is going to be. I'm happy to help anybody with that because it's, you know, it's pretty easy to come up with, but knowing what obstacles and thresholds you have to overcome to not be stuck in a bridge loan is the key. Right. So, working that out on paper and actually seeing that to fruition is the key, in my opinion, and not just, oh, we got a bridge loan on it, and we'll do this when we're done. That is so scary to me because that is not, I've seen the worst case scenario happen, and it can be avoided if you have the right team in place on the financing side. Those bridge lenders are there. Most of them, you know, they've got good intentions, but some of them, they just came to the market this year. And what are they there for? Their business model is not there to be a great and long-lasting lender relationship for you. They are there to do something that we don't like to discuss. And that is what I'd be wary of. You know, having somebody who understands the game, because the bridge product is great, but knowing where you're going, knowing where the property is going to bridge to, knowing where you're exiting, that is key. And who you're exiting to would be great. So,
It's what we say often, that the worst position you can be in, the one thing you want to avoid at all costs is being a forced seller. And especially a forced seller in an illiquid market, right? If you wind up in a tight market, financing is not readily available, asset values might be down, and you're stuck trying to sell a property, offload it. In that case, it's tough, and that's often where foreclosures and things like that happen. So, not to scare anyone out of it, I think, you know, if you look around, a lot of people are confident that we should remain in a lower interest rate environment for a fair amount of time. The rates on these bridge loans are incredible, and if you perform well with the right product and the right group, it can be spectacular. So just a fair word of warning as far as, you know, do your homework, do your due diligence beforehand, but don't shy away from it by any means. I think it's just knowing your strategy, making sure you know what your exit looks like.
And so I must say, I'll tell you that you can qualify some bridge loans in the 4% range. In that case, that is rare, obviously, but if you have your exit strategy in place, you know what you're doing, the experience is there.
Right.
The product just fits the absolute best sponsorship and deal model, period. You will see advantageous bridge terms come to you that, in my opinion, if you turn down, you have a problem. Like, I don't understand why you can take it. So,
yeah. No, we've seen them, and it's incredible to see what's out there. So there's it is an amazing time in our space, thanks largely to the financing and the environment that we're playing in. So definitely a great point to end on that note with. Now, looking at 2020, of course, we're not looking for necessarily a prediction on what the market's going to do or what we're going to see. But what advice would you give to investors moving into 2020? Where should they look for financing?
For me, it's all about having your team in place, and knowing what that team brings to the table. You know, what value is each person bringing whenever you're looking at a deal from the acquisition standpoint all the way to the financing portion. And, you know, if you don't have that in place, I'm happy to discuss it with you in terms of where we are with these exit strategies, the bridge loans. But back to it, it's all about having your team, and your team is adding value piece by piece to keep you moving forward through the year 2020 and beyond. You know, 2020 is looking like a great year, in my opinion, in terms of, you know, doing business. But things can change, right? I mean, things can happen. Surprises can occur. And if that does occur, it's good to know that you also have that team there to ride that out with you as well. And that's the key for me. It's just kind of having your champions go to work for you. And that's what mm-hmm. I like to be. And that's what I recommend to owners and developers through and through, is having a yep. valuable resource on your team.
Right. And this isn't necessarily just a plug for us, you know, just to make it clear. I think this is just general advice as a whole. If you're looking at the finance side of the business, whether you work with Rand Capital, or there's a lot of other very, very qualified brokers out there, it's important to understand what goes into this, because these guys are doing a lot of hard work behind the scenes that investors are oftentimes not fully aware of what goes into it. It's not simply passing it to a direct lender. It's constantly keeping in contact with the direct lenders, constantly knowing the movements in the market, being able to adjust to, towards that. That way you as the investor are not just taking someone's word, because oftentimes if you approach a direct lender, they have one option that they can offer you. And you're going to, of course, they're going to want to sell the option to you, right? Versus what Mitch's role primarily is to go out there and go to battle for you, and to shop around, to use the leverage through the relationships that he's been working hard, and he's flying out to see various direct groups around the country and identifying who's going to be able to compensate us with the most worthwhile terms and product right. to fit the various customers' needs. So I've realized there's a tremendous amount of value to not only that, but also having the ability to see what does agency look like against bridge, and what does CMBS look like, and so on, right? So I always encourage that model of having a broker there that knows what they're doing, whether it's with us or whether it's with anyone else out there. There's so much value in that, because you're going to be tied up with due diligence. You're going to be tied up with capital raising if you're doing a syndication, and a number of other things. And just being able to have someone there that you can count on, that has that side of the business handled.
Just yeah, it's good to have someone shoulder the burden with you in this part of the, you know, business. It's it can really knock you down whenever 10 days you've got to pivot and find a new way to finance. And we've all been there before. And if you haven't, it's good to, when I get that phone call, I hear the distress and I'm like, don't worry about it. I'll handle it. Right. Because I know what to do, and I have closed the loan in 10 days, and it's not something I say, oh, you need 10 days, call Mitchell. No, it's just one of those. If you're involved in the deal, have someone in place that knows how to pivot and take your deal somewhere else, because he's been privy to all the information and knowledge of the products in the market. So
that's right. Yeah, and I can definitely second that. The biggest curveballs we've been thrown in the midst of acquisition are on the lending side oftentimes, right? And when that stuff happens and you're watching rates drop or go up, or, you know, whatever it might be, those are some of the biggest surprises that you need to be prepared for and in good hands with. So yeah, can definitely agree with that. And, you know, you've, again, just recently joined Rand Capital, but, you know, we expect, you know, you to be a leader and a partner within the group, and we're excited about the value you've been bringing for many years and just since in the immediate future as well. So I'd love to hear from you. Just what is your vision for the company moving forward?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been, you know, on the outside looking in at Rand for a while, and I completely admire the family environment that we have there. It made it a lot easier for me to come on board and join a team that just, you know, we're hitting at all cylinders. And, you know, now I have a perspective as a lending expert. And now I'm seeing it through the investor lens. I'm able to see all aspects of the machine and actually add value on my side as best I can, and be a resource for Rand that, it's exciting. And, you know, 2020 is, you know, we're going to have a lot of business to look at, but it's going to be great to have Rand beside my name, knowing that, you know, we've got a good family of companies to back whatever, you know, scenario we encounter this next year.
Love it. Now, what's the best way our listeners can reach you?
Yeah. So, you know, you can reach me by email. It's mitch@randcre.com, as well as by cell phone. Don't mind you call me anytime. This is the juice for me, as Dylan said. I love going to work in the financing world and figuring out what I can do to help. So my cell phone number is 615-506-8711. And call me anytime, seriously.
He means it. He means it. All right, Mitch. Well, thanks for jumping on the show here. And to our listeners, there you have it. It's another edition of the Rand Siri Show. We appreciate everyone joining as always. So if you have any questions or any follow-up things you'd like to see more of on the show, you can always shoot us an email to info@randcre.com. Make sure to leave us a rating, review, and comment whenever you listen to the podcast, and we will see you next week. Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks.